Today's show, creative ways to raise NIL, from raising ticket prices to hooking up with the cannabis company. Plus, pressure. Lincoln Riley, Oklahoma, Michigan, all over the place. And look out for the Otters, man. We're not forgetting.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
I saw going to college as like the electric company.
Russ Dellinger.
Quote, lack of talent, end quote, refund for the previous 15 seasons.
And SI's Pat Forty.
We give our some of our best insight on clusters, $100 a month.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to Pod. And any of you guys got $100 a month laying around, extra month? Arkansas.
Not ever more, Dan.
Arkansas is looking for it. NIL, big week for NIL. Never ends.
No.
Arkansas athletic director says all they need is 10,000 people in Arkansas to give $100 a month. And they'd have plenty of money. And he says they can't just keep going to the Waltons because they've already been generous. They need the groundswell, $100. They have 1,000 guys in their collective. Ole Miss has got 5,000. So Arkansas is looking longingly at Ole Miss, saying, now those guys got their crap together, which may or may not be the first time anyone's ever looked at Ole Miss and said, you got your crap together. But hey, pretty good for Ole Miss. They do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, mm-hmm. The governor of Georgia signed an executive order. I don't know that much about how executive orders work, but I thought they were more like an emergency, which this clearly is. That said, nobody is allowed to say that their schools in the state can't offer extra NIL, not the NCAA or anyone else. So this seems to be a preemptive shot. So we have an executive order in Georgia. Tennessee is raising ticket prices for next year. Smart timing. 14.5%. And based on how the program's looking, they're going to get it. 10% of it, though, is now earmarked to pay talent fee set aside for the players. So we got all that. And wait, there's probably more, but I can't remember. Anyway, everyone's looking for money or something, or holding out. What's going on, Ross?
Well, everybody is preparing to pay players directly. And so, yeah, they're looking for money, even though some would say they have plenty of money to share with athletes. They want, you never have more money, Dan, or you can never have too much money, Dan, right? So everybody's after more and more money. Meanwhile, the House settlement hasn't just been approved, but there's some doubt that it will get approved, and everybody's obviously angling. And I think the executive order from Georgia told you a lot maybe about what's happening, and that is this interim period until the House settlement gets passed and approved, or if it doesn't get passed and approved, we'll be in this murky kind of interim type of deal. And it's a span of time that you wonder, Dan, if schools would just start going, screw it, we're paying the athletes directly.
Wild, wild west. Embrace it. That's my thing. This is my thing.
And Georgia opened the door, obviously, for that to happen. Tennessee's trying to get more, obviously, produced and generate more revenue. And Arkansas is trying to rally its boosters to do the same. So, yeah, here we are, man.
Let's go. No guardrails. Pat, who are you donating to? You going to throw in?
No, as a matter of fact, I'm not going to throw in, but, I do find this interesting. It's stunning. I was thinking today how quaint the original grassroots booster donor movement, IPTE at Clemson. I pay $10 a year, $10 a year Now, Arkansas, we need you to pay $10,000, man. We need some.
No, $10,000 paying $100 a month. Oh yeah, $1,200.
Yeah,
$1,200.
Yeah, $1,200. Whatever. All right. So yeah, not ten a month, not ten
I
a year. We need $1,200 a year.
Ip-twa.
Plus, we need your seat donation. Plus, you know, we need your parking payment. Plus, we need you to agree to be stuck up at the concession stands, etc. So no, we've come a long way, baby, since IPTE was first concocted like 60, 70 years ago. But the thing, I get it. I understand what the schools are doing. I'm not sure I even necessarily disagree with it other than the way that it has been presented. Talent fee? I mean, okay, sure. I'm wondering if you're going to charge a 10% talent fee to your fans. Danny White, the highest paid athletic director in the SEC, perhaps in the nation, $2.75 million a year. He going to give a 10% donation to the talent fee for the players? You know, I hear the athletic directors, everything we do is for the student athletes, except for when it's also for us to make 2.75. Danny has, in the non-coaching category on the staff directory at Tennessee, they have 266 people listed, not counting any of the coaches of any of the sports. The executive staff is 22 people. There's a lot of people employed, a lot of deputies, many senior associates. There's a lot of people who I wonder if maybe they would like to donate a talent fee to help the student athletes, since everything they're about is helping the student athletes. Maybe the highest paid AD in the country could help the student athletes as well as the fans.
I bet he does. It's a big business. This is what it is.
You bet he does, or he does. I don't know.
Usually there's ADs and stuff give back. I don't know. I'm wondering, do you feel better about the ticket increase if you have it set aside? I kind of thought it was genius, because I think otherwise you sit there and go, wait a minute, 14.5%. I don't want to pay that, but you're going to pay it anyway because the Vols are really good. And Danny White's got they want a baseball title. They got football rolling, but you're going to grumble. But if you're sitting there saying, hey, it's going to pay for the players, I'd be more inclined, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I mean, sure. If that's what you're doing, you're not saying.
They used to raise it, and they didn't get anything to, like, this is like a good, I don't know how fans will feel about this. I also don't know how fans will boo the players when they're sitting in their 10% higher seat. And
They might. Oh, one Tennessee fan kind of threw a, sent a message to me that said this about the new fee. They should give a, quote, lack of talent, end quote, refund to the previous 15 seasons. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah. The Derek Dooley era, the Butch Jones era, the Jeremy Pruitt era.
You know, all this goes back, the stuff that Arkansas AD Hunter Yurcheck said, and obviously Tennessee, you know, all this goes back to the NCAA rules prohibiting direct pay to athletes, and thus schools turning to fans and donor bases to foot the bill when they have all this cash from TV money and sponsorship, all this stuff over here piling up. And right now, at least, they can't use it. It's against NCAA rules. So they're going to the fans to do it, which seems completely unfair. And it's why, if the settlement doesn't get approved, you got to think that some of these schools, like the Georgia executive order allowing them to pay directly, the school to pay directly, will just start doing it using TV money, sponsorships, ticket sale money, and just start paying the athletes directly and not charging the fans kind of extra in a way to do it.
We need more executive orders out there.
We'll get them. Virginia has something similar.
Yeah.
You know, so you have a Virginia one, you have a Georgia one, those two specifically, but there are a couple other states, obviously, that have state laws that prohibit the NCAA from enforcing rules. They don't necessarily permit schools from paying directly to athletes, but that Tennessee law does, or the Georgia law now does, executive order, and in the Virginia also has one too.
What Tennessee is doing and what Arkansas would like to do, but what Tennessee is doing, instead of saying to the fans, hey, we would like you to donate to the collective, they're saying, you're going to donate. This is what you, if you want tickets, this is what you're going to do. You are going to pay more, and we're going to direct it to the athletes to pay house money. I hope there's line items that show how much money they get for the talent fee and exactly where the talent fee goes, so that there's complete transparency on all of it. But that's what this is it's not voluntary anymore. It's now going to be mandatory. And they, to Dan, to your point, they can do it right now. They're hot. They've got a great product and they've got great fans. You know, they may lose a 2,000 fans or something. They're like, forget it, I'm not going to do this. Hey, they got other ones that'll take their place. They're putting 105,000 in that stadium no matter what right now.
Yeah, they're hot. Obviously, they're hot. You strike where the iron's hot. I what I'm interested in, too, is like, okay, let's say you go into these boosters. You want your 100 a month, or for some of them, more than that. And everyone's excited, but... And this is why the cost certainty, like if you're a Florida State fan right now and you watch the portal just blow up on you, team's not any good, and you're going, some of my money is paying these guys that aren't as good as I thought. We're losing. I don't like, some of them might get bent. Like, you know, you could bench guys that are making a lot of money. And then they're like, I mean, first thing that's going to get cut out of my monthly budget is the 100 a month or 1,000 a month, right? Like, it's almost like if you have to be on an upward spiral like Tennessee is and capture that while you can, because what goes up, generally speaking, comes down. And you could be Florida State. Last year, Florida State was the hottest program going, and now everyone's mad. And all of a sudden, you trying to rebuild as a coach with less money. Like, everything's about momentum.
Well, there's some fear, Dan. You know, Hunter Yurcheck mentioned Ole Miss in his speech to the Little Rock Touchdown Club, talking about how Ole Miss has 5,000 subscribers, members to its collective, and obviously suggesting that Ole Miss and others have raised annually twice as much for their football roster. And he's probably not wrong. He's probably not wrong there. But I remember, I recall 2 years ago when Ole Miss finished the season with a losing streak, few games in a row. And I remember hearing from those of the Ole Miss collective that they feared and even saw a drop off in donations at the end of the year as the team started to lose. And that's obvious going to come with the territory in this situation. And it's why one of the big storylines right now is Florida State. They have a pretty large collective and they need continuing donations to fund the football team and the collective. And right now they're 0-3 with losses to Memphis, Boston College, and Georgia Tech. So I don't think that's sitting real well. And you wonder how much they can sustain losses and still fund the roster. And that's a real concern. And you see that in athletic department giving, right? When a football team is doing poor, the athletic department just doesn't get as much donations. You see them going down. Well, that's happening in the collective world too.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And like that, you talk about striking when the iron is hot. I mean, I remember going to Marshall like 2 days after they beat Notre Dame and going there on campus. And I mean, the whole athletic department, everything was, hey, we're hitting our fans with donate to this, fund that, help us with this. We're hot. Donate, you know, $26.24 or whatever the score was of the game. I mean, they were trying like crazy. But then, yes, Ross, the opposite dynamic is absolutely true, that you're ducking and dodging when your team's losing and you've already asked these people for money or they've already invested. And they're like, hey, where's our return on investment? And that puts more pressure on the coaches and, yes, the college players. And people get squeamish, understandably. I'm not crazy about people, you know, really viciously criticizing individual players. But when you're making money, guess what comes with it? More scrutiny and more fans that feel like they are entitled to criticize their million-dollar quarterback.
Yeah, it's interesting. But there is a scramble going. By the way, is anybody, you think anybody, enjoying Florida State's 0-3 start as the portal blows up on them more than William Christopher Sweeney? you want your portal, huh? You want your portal. Yeah. And develop your own guys. Buy stock in Clemson.
Yeah. There might be some other people enjoying it as much. Maybe Miami. Well, maybe even some people at the ACC.
Plenty of,
but yeah, when you get ripped because Florida State went to the portal and you don't go to the portal. And I mean, look, they did lose to Georgia. It's not like they're 3-0. But, you know, hey, maybe the portal's not so great. I don't know. Well, it was a slew of money talk. I don't know. I'm kind of surprised there's only 5,000 guys in a collective. I guess I thought there'd be more. Kind of shows
how big for a collective.
I know, but it still kind of shows me
that
there's not that many people willing to pay extra. And I would not give. Okay. I think we've established. I saw going to college as like the electric company. Like you paid for your light. And it helped you. And then when you're done with that, you no longer were part of the election. That never like hit me. Okay. So, but I understand many people do give.
You're not giving to the UMass collective?
Dan. I give nothing to you. I wouldn't give UMass a dollar. Like, no.
Oh.
I paid
this is
you.
One of my favorite dynamics.
I
of
paid
the
you for my degree. Why would I give extra? I was educated enough to learn how to keep my money. And it wasn't giving to somebody who already rendered services. Like someone fixes my car, and I'll just send an extra $100 the next year to that mechanic going, thanks for keeping the car didn't break down. It doesn't happen. Anyway, many people do. Many people see it differently than me. That's fine. I am a Boston Bruins fan, and I wonder if they said if we give an extra $100. Like this is the one I don't get. I think basketball would be my hardest one. They're like, this kid's going to be like Cooper Flagg, right? Going to Duke. This guy's going to make like $800 million in his life. And you want me to give him 10 grand right now? Like,
right. For the 6 months he's going to be on campus?
Yeah. Like, he's the number one pick. He's already got a deal. He's already rich. You want me to give him money? Okay. People do it. So that's fine. That's just. Yeah. I will not give future 800 millionaires my hard-earned 100 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Not.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't do it either. But
people
it's money. Yeah, they do. But I talked recently to somebody who's smarter than all of us, who I think educated in England, Oxford or Cambridge or whatever. They said that like there's no alumni loyalty to their schools in Europe. Not athletic, but period.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, I went to school there, and I got a degree from there. It's not like we're going to go back and walk the campus with tears in our eyes and, you know, whip out our checkbook and give $100,000 or $1 million or whatever. No, it's just like, that's where I went to school. But in America, it's so, so different, and nothing is more profoundly different about it than athletics. And even people that didn't go to those schools will give astonishing amounts of money so their team can be better than the other guy's team.
I'd be more inclined to give to the Boston Bruins. I don't know.
I would give to the Denver Broncos, except I'm mad.
Maybe
at
this.
Them,
so. Don't tell these NFL owners. Don't give them this idea.
I mean,
this Doc Prescott costs a lot of money, man. All right, moving on. Mountain West expansion. Ross, what's the latest? We're hearing the eastward look to the Mid-South and in New Orleans. They're looking to have some fun. Yeah. Are they trying to get their party on? Little Beale Street, little Bourbon Street.
Bourbon Street. Beale Street.
We're not doing no boring. Yeah. You know, the Fresno people, they like getting a little sideways. You know, they like getting a little crazy. They're like, let's add a little New Orleans and Memphis to this. What is happening?
Well, I don't know, but they're ignoring
Vegas. So what? I don't get it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know if there's anything that new than what we talked about last week after all this happened, right? There we talked about they're going to look east first. They're going to look at the Memphis Tulane, maybe
this
even
is
like Pac-12.
Did I call it Mountain West expansion? I mean Pac-12.
You did. You meant
Pac-12. Who's trying to get Memphis? Pac-12? Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't think Memphis is going to the Mountain West.
Okay.
Buddy.
Thank you. Sorry.
I'm not so sure Memphis is going to the Pac-12. Who knows? I think we talked about last week, there's a group of maybe 6 to 8 programs, Memphis, Tulane, a couple of Texas schools like UTSA, maybe North Texas, Texas State, South Florida, even Rice. If you get Tulane, maybe you do something there. And I think all those are potential options. I don't know that anything's changed, except I think this week, there probably will be some meetings and presentations had with those schools to gauge their interest. Thing is, Dan, I think I said this last week, but it's probably got to be a lot more money than what you're getting now to agree to move into a conference that's clear across the country. I think it's got to be a significantly more money, and I don't know that it's going to be.
Right. I haven't seen anything that it would indicate that would be game-changing money, and so that you're going to then earn the, you know, once in a lifetime right to try to get to Pullman or to try to get to Corvallis. Not easy places to get to, especially Pullman. If you're Memphis and Tulane right now, or if you're UTSA and North Texas or whoever, it's good to be wanted. It's good to talk, good to listen. Keep your options open. Be patient. Be choosy. Go back to the AAC, eh? You know, we're kind of being wooed over here. How are things looking on our end? Maybe we want to do a little uneven success initiative revenue distribution like the ACC is, if that would benefit them. Or maybe you're just going to sit there and say, you know, Pac-12, if you can get Stanford and Cal to come back, then we'll talk, or something like that. And that's not going to happen unless the ACC blows up. And I don't think that's going to happen either. But like, if you're Tulane and Memphis in particular, you probably just at least are like, all right, let's at least weigh our options and we'll go from there. But I don't see anything that indicates, oh man, this is a no-brainer. Let's go to the Pac-12.
Well, it's unclear what the media evaluation, you know, is. Is it 9 million? Is it 10 million? Is it 12 million? Is it 15 million? Which is a number that gets thrown around, which is a number that's hard to believe. But then again, we all know the Pac-12 does have a lot of excess revenues coming. Would it use those revenues to try to lure programs? I don't know. But at some point, if they don't have success out east, Dan, I think they do come back around, as we talked about last week and I wrote about and Pat wrote about it. They'd come back around maybe to Nevada, UNLV, because they need two more. They've got to find two more some way.
Maybe they're just putting pressure on Nevada and UNLV that way, because that still makes more sense. But hey, when I think Mountain West, I think Memphis.
That's what you mean Pac-12.
Pac-12.
You keep saying Mountain West.
I think Pac-12.
Dan, has it been a long day, Dan? It's you okay day, over man. There?
I'm trying. $100 a month. I'm going to give $100 a month. People want my $100 a month.
How do you think our listenership would react if we said we need them to give $100 a month?
Let's find out. I can tell you this. We're on a win streak. We don't go to any like first responder bowl here. Rose Bowl
That's
every
true.
Year for mm-hmm. this program.
That's true.
We need to start a collective for ourselves.
I think we do.
You know,
we should
mine money from our listeners.
Good God, you get me more focused and in a better mood if you start throwing $100 at me a month.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We just need $100 from our 20,000, 30,000 listeners. Yeah, we need $100 each.
Right. I'll do it.
That's all.
Pony
That's
up.
All.
We'll start putting some. Yeah, we'll really actually prepare for the show. stuff like that will come out on time.
I don't know about that.
We'll let y'all
don't
criticize.
Go so far.
Let's not go too much.
I already do criticize.
All right. Let's go to break. We're going to talk big games this weekend, including a lot of pressure at Oklahoma and on Lincoln Riley. It was a few Novembers ago, Bedlam, Oklahoma, at Oklahoma State. The Cowboys win 37-33. Big victory. Knock Oklahoma out of contention. Still a 10-win team. And Lincoln Riley heads back to Norman, and by morning, he has decided to take the job at USC, despite a 55-10 record at Oklahoma and three 12-win seasons. And it was a stunner. It was a big pickup for USC. At the time, people said, hey, maybe he doesn't want to try to take Oklahoma and play in the SEC. Path to a title will be easier in the Pac-12. Goes out to USC, wins 11 his first year, goes 8-5 last year. Of course, during that period, USC agrees to go to the Big Ten. So now he's in his big conference anyway. This weekend, all of this somehow comes back in order as USC visits Michigan in its first big Big Ten, if not test, then marquee game. So we don't really know what that Wolverine offense is capable of doing. And at the same time, Oklahoma gets its first big moment in the SEC when it hosts a white-hot Tennessee program. So, as a host that puts together topics that is worth $100 a month from all of our listeners. See where I'm going with this? I don't know how to land this plane. But let's talk about these two things.
You put in some work here. Yeah. Yeah, somebody's been doing some
prep. I want so much a plane as a trial balloon.
Once you started talking about a monthly hundy in my pocket, yeah. I start really working. I got it together during the break. I got focused.
I was at that Bedlam game in 2021? Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2021. Yeah. And where he famously said afterward, I would not be the LSU football coach. But, of course, he didn't say he would not be the USC football coach. And 8 hours later, he was the USC football coach. That was a wild one. And these are two huge games. Yeah. For both of those programs, you know, you would think because of Michigan's offensive situation and complete instability, at quarterback, that USC would be expected to win that game. And despite how great Tennessee has looked, Oklahoma was going to be at home. It's I'm guessing game day is there. They're in the primetime slot, TV slot. Like, I think one of the Oklahoma beat writers had tweeted out yesterday, all these like great things, sellout crowd, you know, game day, all this stuff, big opponent, top 25 matchup. And that this is why Oklahoma moved to the SEC for these type of games, for this atmosphere more often in its stadium. So pressure is on.
Pressure's on both of them. Yeah, it is a fascinating kind of arc that got us here, for sure. And that was such a wild night with Lincoln. And then a week later was Brian Kelly all of a sudden going to LSU. But that's neither here nor there for now. You know, it was shocking when Lincoln made that move. Oklahoma fans were furious. They're not the type of program that gets jilted. And I think they greatly enjoyed Lincoln's comeuppance last year when they went 8-5. But they look pretty good this year at USC, and this is a huge game. One of us even said it was the most intriguing conference game of the year, and then was roundly criticized for saying so. I remember that a few episodes ago. Mm-hmm. So first time they've played on campus since 1958. Reigning champions in a little bit of disarray. They've changed starting quarterbacks. USC comes in favored. I mean, there is pressure on Lincoln Riley. You're favored walking into the Big House by a touchdown. That doesn't happen a lot unless your name's Ohio State usually. So What are you going to do? What are you going to show? And then that's mid-afternoon. They're not making USC play an early body clock kickoff at big noon or anything. It's a 3:30 start. And then after the game, yeah, we flip over to watch what's going on in Norman with Brent Venables, his successor there. And they're a home underdog against Tennessee. So both programs, yes, they're, like, the Oklahoma fans are going to be so wound up by what happens on Saturday in both Ann Arbor and Norman. It's going to be a big weekend for them and for Oklahoma State, which has a big game too.
So let's start with Riley. I almost feel like he had a great line in his press conference. Michigan is still a great team. I mean, they're 2-1, and they lost to Texas, who may not lose. I mean, literally, Texas looks fantastic. That said, Michigan has no quarterback answer. I mean, they're already on quarterback, starting quarterback number two, Alex Orji, who heretofore has not proven he can actually throw a football, which tends to be an important characteristic and skill.
He's thrown 7 passes
of the quarterback position. So this is a great defense that Michigan has. We'll see what they can put together. We can talk about Michigan in a minute, but really, to me, this is a lot of pressure on Lincoln Riley. Like, you better win. And I think when they started and looked at the schedule and you say, okay, we're going to Michigan, you wouldn't think it would be a, you better win. It would be, this is going to be a great game. And look, if we lose, but if they can't come in, the whole deal is, you know, is SC capable of competing in the Big Ten? Do they have enough in the trenches? Are they tough enough? Is Lincoln Riley's program tough enough? Yeah, they can develop quarterbacks like no one's business. They win Heismans. But can they do this? I don't think he's got any wiggle room because Michigan's looked so feeble offensively. I think this would be it's quite incredibly. I'm acknowledging this is probably unfair, but you better win in Ann Arbor against the reigning national champs. Or where is Lincoln Riley after this game? So that's a lot, right? What do you think, Pat?
Yeah, no, it is. They didn't play this last week, but their first two games, they've looked very good. I mean, that was a high-level game against LSU that they won. They made the plays that LSU didn't make to win. Then they came back and absolutely handled Utah State. And then they were off last week, so you're coming in healthy and prepared. Now you're facing a running quarterback, which they haven't faced, but it's a limited Michigan offense. And the USC defense looks drastically improved and just tougher. And I think you've got to be that when you're going to play a Michigan team, especially a Michigan team that could run the ball 85% of their plays. So they look like they're prepared to handle what Michigan is going to put on the field. But can they show up and execute with a lot on the line here? I expect them to do it, but I agree that this is a game where Lincoln Riley's going to get some blowback if they don't win.
Yeah, you know, part of the expectation I think is so high is because of how Michigan has looked really poorly on offense and. A quarterback that, as mentioned earlier, has thrown 7 attempts in his career. And not many of the 7 have looked great. That's a problem. So you certainly should beat a team. If you're going to have a team that's going to compete for the playoff, compete for the Big Ten championship, you gotta beat a team that hasn't been able to move the football very well, hasn't been able to, complete many forward passes.
Yeah, and this is tricky for Michigan. You know, I think I said at the beginning of the season, they're going to have a good defense. Maybe across a season where they have a lot of challenges, they can develop the offense, hold in there, and maybe by the end when they go to Columbus, they've got a reasonable offense to go with a great defense. 3 games in, there's no sign of the offense. And the lack of going and getting a portal quarterback last winter, as we said, there was chaos. Who are you going to get? You can't get this. Like, who's going to be the coach? All of that. But, like, you look and say, man, Indiana, they would, what would they do for
Curtis Rourke, who's playing in Indiana, who is at Ohio, right? Shoot. Something like that.
Yeah.
You know, not even talking about going to get Cam Ward or something like that, but just getting somebody serviceable who could help them. And so I think Michigan fan will be, most of them will be fairly patient because they just won the national title and this is what it is. But there's always so many times you want to get beat soundly at home. So there's a lot here riding on Michigan as well in this game. Oklahoma, I agree. This is why you go to the SEC, because it got stale at Oklahoma. And they're one big game every 2 years, other than Bedlam. They kind of have Bedlam in this, and they play a non-conference, but they play Texas down in Dallas, and it's a great scene. It's incredible, but they're not on campus. So now all these teams are coming in. But when they were in the Big 12, this is a program that wins and wins and wins like nobody else's business. But when they're in the Big 12, they had a inherent built-in advantage over everyone except Texas. Texas seems primed and ready to compete in the SEC. Can Oklahoma? There's been a lot of questions about that in the early start. So they're going to get a big seed. They're going to get a great environment. They're going to get all the campus hyped up. But this Tennessee team looks really, really good. And I'm not saying there's like, I mean, what are you going to do? But they need to play well, right, Pat?
Oh, heck yeah. No, it's a big stage for Oklahoma. And I mean, just so much program pride there because of their tradition. And these are the kind of games they want to go into a new league and show, yeah, we can absolutely compete here. So yeah, you get your big game here at home. The problem is you got a lot of other big games you got to play. You got Alabama coming in November. You've got to go at Mississippi, at Missouri, at LSU. You got Texas and Dallas. So it would behoove Oklahoma to show that it's ready for that gauntlet right here out of the gate. And one thing I do like that the SEC has tended to do is to give the new teams in the league their first game at home. And it's a big show. You know, I remember in 2012, I went with Mike Slive to A&M's SEC opener, and then we got on the plane and flew to Missouri's opener on the same day. They both hosted A&M hosted Florida, Missouri hosted Georgia. So Oklahoma gets the big stage here next week. Texas hosts Mississippi State in a game that could be a massacre. But it kind of, I think it's a nice way to say, hey, we're here now. Let's see what you got, home team, and it'll be a great scene, a great show. But for Brent Venables, who's shown improvement, it's time to show more improvement. This year they're off to a 3-0 start, but they were not good against Houston. They were marginally better against Tulane. They at least put that game away after getting a lead and then nearly letting it slip away. Tennessee is a wagon right now. So this is the kind of game when if you're Oklahoma and you want to show out, it's going to be tough, but you better be ready. And this is classic offensive coach who's an Oklahoma hero. Josh Heupel was the quarterback the last time they won the national championship and was a coach there on the staff with Brent Venables when he was a coordinator. And Venables is a defensive guy. Heupel's got a super high-octane offense. Going to be a lot of subplots to the big plot.
Yeah. So Heupel began his press conference saying that he expected the stadium there in Oklahoma to be quiet for him in honor of his return. So it should be, yeah, the Josh Heupel Bowl. This is one that a lot of folks have been looking forward to. Probably none more than Josh Heupel, although he might not say it. We all know what happened there. Not only did he play there, but then he coached there, and then, you know, was kind of moved off and off the staff and out by Bob Stoops. And so I'm sure there's a little more motivation, I think. And like Pat said, you know, the Sooners have not looked like Tennessee has looked. They struggled against a Houston team that probably isn't going to be very good. In Tulane was within 5 points in the fourth quarter before Oklahoma scored back to back. You know, Jackson Arnold has kind of been up and down, but it's Oklahoma defense, especially in Tulane in the second half, did not look great at times, and they will face an offense that is just absolutely humming. I think Tennessee has outscored opponents in their three games 191-13.
Not bad.
Something like that. So it's been, it's been pretty good. Now those opponents were Kent State, Chattanooga, and NC State, but it's been impressive to watch their offense operate. And then on the other side of the ball, right, Tennessee has just a couple of absolute studs on the defensive front as well.
All right. There was some buzz, inaccurate, but there was some buzz about whether Florida would cut ties with Billy Napier, Coach Napier, already. That did not happen. The Gators will play Mississippi State this weekend. Two programs really feeling good about themselves right now. That's a sad game. It's a sad.
Oh, it's very. Who again? The loser is like, you know, completely bereft.
Well, I mean, I hope Florida can beat Mississippi State. It's just sad. It's just a sad. Yeah, we'll see. Anyway, they're playing. Here's my question for you. I'll start with you, Pat. Firing the coach early, right? You get a head start on the search, right? Get a head start on the search. It's sort of been it. The old Jeremy Foley at Florida did it. It must be done eventually. It needs to be done now or whatever. And it allowed him to get Urban Meyer before Notre Dame could get Urban Meyer. And that's kind of the famous thing. This seems a little different time and space. We have the transfer portal. Things like that right after the season. So you kind of need a coach quickly, but we also have this playoff. So a lot of the hot coaches, even at the group of five level, could be really into something late. Does it help to fire your coach early still, or does it make more sense to fire you? I don't know. What are your thoughts? Sorry, Billy Napier, that you're the example of this.
Yeah, sorry to Billy, but you're probably gone.
Yeah.
Everyone expects him to be gone. He may well be gone, win or lose on Saturday, because the following week is an open date. And if you've already decided it's hopeless, then this would be the time to do it, where you can at least get your staff back in aligned, you know, however it's going to be for the rest of the year, and try to salvage what you can of the season. Well, yes, starting not only your search for the next guy, but starting to marshal forces to keep whatever players you feel like you want to keep that you could lose in the event of a coaching change, especially DJ Lagwe, the freshman quarterback. Florida has absolutely, they've had a cottage industry of firing coaches in season. They've done it to everybody but Urban Meyer since Steve Spurrier. Ron Zook was fired. That was the one that paved the way for them to get Urban.
Groomed.
He was groomed, absolutely. Will Muschamp was fired during the season. Jim McElwain was fired during the season. Dan Mullen was fired during the season. Which actually, if you pile all those up, it's like, and we talked about this on the podcast. Is Florida that good a job, or just if you have an absolute superstar coach like Steve Spurrier and Urban Meyer, it's a good job? Anyway, that's a different topic. When things go bad at Florida, they go so bad so fast that it seems like there's no alternative, but we're firing somebody. And so this is now going to be Billy Napier's turn to be that guy. And, you know, we can all speculate on who would be next. There's names that come up immediately that are within the same conference, the SEC, Lane Kiffin, Eli Drinkwitz. If you want to throw out others, that's fine too. But to your point, Dan, that's another interesting added dynamic to this. If Missouri and Mississippi are in the playoff, does that throw wrenches into any potential pursuit of them? You would hope that a coach would actually finish out a season that involves a playoff bid. But I ain't putting anything past anybody in this sport.
Yeah, that's going to be fascinating with the expanded playoff and how it impacts the coaching cycle, because obviously I don't think maybe coaches bail on bowls to take jobs, I don't think coaches are going to be bailing on their team, bailing on a playoff game to take a job.
Would you want a coach like that? Like that seemed like a disqualifying bit. Like,
And we've seen it before. We've seen coaches not get jobs because they didn't bail on a conference championship game. We saw that a couple years ago with Willie Fritz at Tulane in the Georgia Tech job. I think that sure seems like that he could have had that job perhaps if he would have not led or chosen to not lead his team into that AAC championship game that year. So we've seen that happen at the conference championship game level. And I don't think that we would see a coach bail on a team, even a G5 coach maybe. Think about that. A group of five coach who may be in line for some kind of promotion to a power conference job gets the G5 playoff spot, the 12 seed, and has to play third week of December. What does he do? Does he pass an opportunity of a lifetime? Does he pass that up to coach his team in a game that he might lose by 40 points? That's going to be one of the fascinating things. And there are G5 coaches out there. I think probably a job like Florida, I'm guessing, probably wouldn't hire a G5 coach. But there's certainly jobs that could come open this year. I'm thinking of like Baylor, who probably would look at a G5 head coach. So it's going to be fascinating to see how the playoff and the expanded playoff does impact the coaching cycle.
The name you're going to hear the most if and when Florida opens is Lane Kiffin. And if you remember, Lane Kiffin was the offensive coordinator at Alabama, but he had already basically locked up a job at Florida Atlantic. And Nick Saban was so underwhelmed with the job Lane Kiffin did in the playoff semifinal, preparing the Crimson Tide against Washington, that he kicked him to the curb, said, "Go ahead and go, Lane. We'll handle the championship game without you." I don't think Lane would bail on a Mississippi playoff run as a head coach for a Florida, but there is that history there.
That would be any coach that, bitch.
Yeah.
Come on.
You don't want that coach.
But like you said, you wouldn't want him. What? Yeah, it would be such a bad look.
Terrible.
The problem if you fire, okay, let's say you fire Billy Napier in the next couple weeks, and then you're sitting there, and you want to get Lane Kiffin, and they make the playoff, and you don't make a, like, it becomes so awkward. All of the questions would be, are you going? And a Lane Kiffin or Eli Drinkwitz would have to sit there and say, absolutely not, I'm staying here. Now, they can always come back and, you know, violate that promise to the media, but it's just sort of like, this is going to be so awkward with the timing. It's just such an awkward situation, so.
Yeah, it could be. I could really be a fascinating dynamic.
It's going to be great. It's going to be a total cluster, and we're going to be here for it.
We like clusters. Yeah. We give some of our best insight on clusters.
We are cluster. We are pro cluster. $100 a month, please, everyone. I mean, we do better than Arkansas football. That's all we're saying.
We big.
Ain't saying we're Bama. Did you just say Woo Pig? That's great.
I did say Woo Pig.
Yeah, Woo Pig, babe. 100 a month.
Big, baby.
In another story of you just, you know, headlines that would not make sense 10 years ago. USC, Southern California, got paid that Lincoln Riley contract and the players. They just announced a first-of-a-kind partnership with Cookies, a cannabis company. They have an official cannabis of USC football. It wasn't long ago the NCAA was trying to ban guys for a year if they smoked weed during their competitions. They would test players, and if they caught them during NCAA competition at the NCAA basketball tournament, you were then banned for 1 year. Now USC's got an official hookup. Meet us at the parking lot by the mall, or the mall parking lot by the movie theater.
Yeah.
Ask for
any NIL deals coming there, maybe from with some athletes.
No wonder Snoop Dogg was so into this program.
Thankfully, the NCAA lifted their policy. I believe the drug tests do not include last year or earlier this year. They did that. Thankfully, they removed that from the drug testing, and now it's just mainly, I believe, PEDs.
Yeah, PEDs.
PEDs.
Yeah. Anyway, we got an official weed supplier of USC football. Just great. Spicoli.
That's tremendous.
Did it. Yeah. Also, and
I don't think I will say, like, out in Vegas, Ross, you can attest to this, but the aroma outside the stadium was fairly weedy.
Yeah.
Before LSU played USC. I'm not saying the players were partaking, but I think a few of the fans on probably on both sides.
Yeah, it's legal now.
Mm-hmm. And all of the rest of Vegas, too.
I was about to say the Vegas streets. I mean, I live in DC, and our streets here smell like pretty much straight marijuana. Vegas is another level. That's another level. I mean, it's just, you get secondhand high walking down the strip. Anyway, moving on, Dan.
And there's weed everywhere. University of Montana. Anyway, there's this group called Montana Together out in Montana, as you might be surprised to learn. They have contacted.
I know, shocking.
University of Montana athletes offering an NIL compensation in exchange for social media endorsements of Democratic Senator John Tester. Okay, so there's an a sitting U.S. senator is attempting NIL deals ranging from.
You wanted to say NID, Dan? Name, image, and Democrat. This is a new one, Dan. This is good.
It's election season. 400 to 2400, depending on services provided, to produce scripted or unscripted social media videos supporting Tester and his policies. So we now have, what? All right. I don't know.
There you go.
Your thoughts? Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Well,
he's the sitting senator.
You go where the popularity is. And if the Grizz are popular there, and if, you know what, I will say, the Grizz supports the pod. We support the Grizz. And so if this puts a little more moolah in the pockets of the Grizz players, I'm all for it.
Take that money.
You may have to deal with somebody who votes the other direction, then getting extremely unhappy with you, especially if you drop a pass or something. But if you catch the passes, I guarantee the politics goes out the window.
Yeah, they're not going to care about that. Yeah, win the games and collect your couple grand from the senator.
Sure.
Yeah, who knew? So Montana Together. So make your money. I think we've taken our eye off the ball here about the animal attacks, and we did get a lot of requests to break down RFK Jr.'s whale incident. There's an incident with a whale. Yeah. It's a little more complicated. I need to spend more time on it. And we've got the animals are rising up, and probably because we've lost track, we have not been documenting the animal attacks.
Yeah.
So here's one. A woman was left crying in a pool of her own blood after getting savaged. This is from the New York Post. No newspaper in America uses the word savaged more than the New York Post.
Yeah. Savaged?
Savaged. Well, you got to see this picture. Savaged by a gang of otters in Malaysia.
Yeah.
The identified victim had been jogging through Tanjung Ara Recreational Park. Oh, that's beautiful. When she was beset by eight of the beasts, viral press reported. This poor woman is running near a park pond, and the otters got angry. And eight of them ran and attacked this poor woman. The victim was transported to a hospital while a wildlife team was dispatched to the park to keep tabs on the otters. They gouged her legs, knocked her over. Pat, what is happening with these otters? We saw that otter in Santa Cruz stealing the surfboard, but this is land warfare now.
No, that's exactly what's happening, though. Otter 439 or whatever it was in Santa Cruz, who was ruling the beach and the surf there, went across the Pacific Ocean, rounded up a posse. Okay? She got run out too much pressure, too much heat from the cops and the surf patrol in California. She went transoceanic across the Pacific to Malaysia, regrouped, started over, new identity. You know, it's like a mafia person goes underground, you come out, new identity, rounded up the posse, and now attacking people in the park in Malaysia. Now, going on land, that's bold. That's bold. I didn't know they were fast enough. You know, they're good in the water, but apparently they can do it on land, too. This is Otter 439 all reenacting. Starting over. New crime spree. Watch it.
Where do you find this stuff, Dan?
Oh, the listeners send me that. They don't send me 100 a month, but they send me Malaysian otter
attacks. You the story. You would rather the stories, wouldn't you, than the
cash? I get a kick out of them. Otter attacks. This was multiple readers.
I've been told to fear them in the water when just growing up on the coast, always in the bayous, swimming in the bayous and all that stuff. We always were on the lookout for not just alligator, but those creatures. They can be ruthless in savagery.
I think otters are terrifying. Absolutely. They look cute, but don't. Anyway, careful out there. If you're jogging near a pond, keep eyes peeled.
Yeah.
Head on a swivel. Ready.
Run fast.
Those otters, they're out there swimming around the little back, looking all, nah. 8 of them just attack this poor woman. The picture's horrible.
The otter octet. Look out.
Pat, the idea that your otter from Santa Cruz swam all the way to Malaysia.
It's a badass otter.
It's a strong otter. That would be a very strong otter to make that swim.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Tough but otter.
I think they're communicating, though. Anyway, a pack of otters attacking me would be, oh, my God.
Bad. Really bad.
Imagine you jogging, and they're running after you. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Anyway, I agree. A little scary.
We'll be back Thursday. More college football talk and nonsense. Picking the games this weekend, getting ready for week 4. Let's do this. Thank you for subscribing. Share us on social media, telling your friends about us. We will talk to you.